to your Friday post game. I'm your host, Malcolm Fleschner.
So
with me. Yes, that's right. I'm excited. I'm
enthusiastic.
Than when
I do it myself, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to muster the enthusiasm you get today, but it's tough. You know, on the counter when we came in today, for some reason, there were a bunch of cans of some sort of cannabis based drink, right?
Right.
You had one.
I had one.
Did you have one?
No.
I don't know what it is. I assume it's not going to get anybody high, but we'll see. Watch Dave.
It's a cannabis energy drink.
Yeah.
Which is weird, right?
It's you're just marketing. All this
extra energy from
Red Bull.
I don't know. My glaucoma has cleared up since I drank some. And so Steve O is with me, of course, and Dave Kohler. It's the three amigos, as Irma likes to call us, or as I like to call us, the three viejitos, which is for those Spanish speakers. Means old guys, and we got a lot to get to today. I don't think there's any inside baseball we want to talk about. I wanted to thank Dave for last week. He did an admirable job by himself. We're going to have some annoying feedback where people compliment him, so you have that to look forward to.
Okay.
And so you did it admirably. I'm not going to comment on the last in the annoying feedback section. I'm not going to comment on what the millennial dumpster fire, the comments about them, because they can cover that themselves the next time if they want to. So, and this is all about us. Steve, Dave, and me. So let's just get right to it. The annoying feedback. Let's find out what you've been saying and why, and respond. That may go on just a little bit too long.
Yeah.
We may have to cut that off.
Someone cut that down.
A little shorter. Yeah. Also, we're not going to be doing. Dave does not have any obituaries for us this week. Sadly, nobody important died. Too bad, but we'll be rooting for next week for you, and we're hoping to get a new graphic, an opening for Dave's segment also, so you have that to look forward to. But let's go to the first. There's a series of these that are just kissing our asses, so we're going to go through them quickly. The first few are for Dave. Let's see, what do we got? Wednesday 2 says, always love your postgame show, Dave, taking the unfamiliar events all over the world to show that it's all connected. Thank you, Wednesday 2. Next. Subfar says, excellent postgame, Dave. I know I would be very interested on the Nigeria story ASAP. I had no idea what was going on over there and how consequential Nigeria is as a nation. Also, I really enjoy your obits. Thank you. Yes, thank you for updating on the Niger Delta Avengers story, Dave. That's appreciated. Next, Bernie Babe 10 says, very unique and entertaining show. Where can I get more of him? Meaning Dave.
You can't.
You can't. You can go back into the archives, the TYT archives. James says, love this postgame, Dave. Those obits were heart-wrenching but important. Thanks so much for sharing them. Unfortunately, I don't think this Nigeria issue will make Jenks radar unless a Western photographer or journalist gets killed there or it causes a huge headache for Westerners in some way. I hope I'm wrong. Come back, Irma,
yeah.
To us.
Not wrong.
What?
He's not wrong.
He's not. No, yeah. I mean the reason we originally did the Niger Delta Avengers story as part of Weekly World News is because there are stories that don't get covered by the main show or the mainstream media here in the United States in general. And Dave posed last week in his post game. He asked when, you know, for viewers to suggest when they think that the show or that the topic will be covered on the main show.
Break through.
And I was like, this is never going to be. But people are making guesses. But the answer is never.
Cenk will not cover Nigeria unless a Popeye's fried chicken opens up there. And then he'll cover it.
It's not like Cenk is covering Popeye's fried chicken.
He loves Popeye's fried
That's
chicken.
True. I know we've discussed that. Now he does. Now he's seen the light. All right, what's the next one, Irma? MagicPan725, I love these post games with Dave. It's good to hear the news that isn't always heard elsewhere. Next, Andrea says, loved your show, Dave. Very informative movie.
All right, we get it. We get it. I don't like Dave. Whatever.
We're getting on to you, Steve. Don't worry. Next, Irma. If it can't be Steve, Malcolm, and Dave on the Friday post game, this is the edges are no longer parallel. I'm quite happy with just Dave. Always informative. The main show rarely highlights a story with which I'm unfamiliar. That's why I love Friday post games and Weekly World News. I am mostly unfamiliar with the stories presented. No Weekly World News this week, but I was very interested in the obituaries and the NDA update. Thanks, Dave, for a great show. The show was a welcome respite from worrying about the hurricane and hoping the contractors that built my house didn't cut any corners. Well, let us know, did they?
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah. We'll see in the next 24 to 36 hours. Will the main show ever cover the Niger Delta Avengers? If one of the Kardashians or Jenners starts dating one, they might. See, that's what I wanted to include it mainly just for
perfect.
That comment. You're right about that.
Or if they're eating at a Popeye's.
Nope. Now, Percy says, I love Steve so much more after these stories.
This well, is when you were. Percy, the smartest person here.
What were the stories?
That was about the Cenk and Popeye's and how Cenk was always wrong and Steve was always right. That's the next one. Oh my God, so good, Steve. Holy shit. Now you're not saying to rush through them, are you? Huh? Huh? Okay. Just to be absolutely clear, I'm British and not a fucking dickhead. I don't know what that was a reference to. I love Steve-O. No more need be said. Maybe it's because you're not a Nazi.
I'm not British the person says, I'm British and not a fucking dickhead, which implies, I guess, many Brits are.
Well, maybe that we had, did we suggest that?
Oh, did we suggest it?
I don't remember doing that. The only thing I remember was talking about Britain was saying that in, you know, they are less tolerant of Nazis than we are because they know they experienced firsthand suffering at the hands of the Nazis. Okay, there's a couple more that are praiseworthy. I love getting my Friday postgame every weekend. Great job. I always love hearing the obituaries. Weekly World News moves a little slow most of the time. Wait a minute.
It does.
But I always love Friday's informality and comfort. Wait, when Dave Kohler is telling you something moves too slowly, that's bad. Tuffy, I just want to say after a year of watching Friday postgames, thank you so much for the great work and commentary. I enjoy these interludes to all the bullshit, awful news out there so much. And I'd have to say Friday postgames are the best ones. I guess that makes me one of the 19. Thank you, Steve, Dave, and Malcolm et al. And I love the sculpture background today. Awesome, really beautiful, and great to know it's out there. That was in Chicago, the sculpture. Brockland says, excellent show today, or whatever day it was. This is the only post game I watch every week, and only if at least two of the three guys today are present. Okay, maybe it's only one of you and some other people nearly as entertaining as you guys. Thanks for the laughs and the enjoyable quiz questions. It's a pretty damn good way to get in some of the news that we in the U.S. don't hear about too often. Really enjoyed Steve's Jenks stories, too. Malcolm, Dave, and Steve are the best Friday post game group. Thank you, Dennis. And this show should be called Malcolm and Friends because he makes the show. His humor is classic. This show is perfect palate cleanser in this ugly time. Romper room for grown-ups. Keep up the excellent work. That's from Arizona, which is one of
which
my
socks. Which is your wife?
No. Yeah, like my wife ever pays attention to what we do on this show. I want to include one from Karen Ola, who's a big fan. Well, it's so good to hear Steve's side of these basketball diaries, or shall we say diary of a mad basketball player. I have no idea the rules, so can't make a call, but I can say if a friendship can stand the many tests of growing pains, maturity, marriage, parenting, with that fucking unprecedented, deeply divisive election last year, it is the real kind good for the long haul. Steve and Cenk are poster examples of what Dumbledore said about the ability of a good person to stand up, not just to their enemies, but to their friends. It's not fun, hurts a lot, with loads of battle scars, often costs friendships. To be in this life with a deep sense of fairness and justice is a great gift. So many people refuse in order to do what is easy. I really admire you guys, Steve, Cenk. Come back to us, Irma, for a second. The reason I wanted to include that one is to provide evidence to the fans at home that there is someone besides me who put some effort into the Friday postgame, and that is Karen Ola.
Karen Ola, kudos. If she's ever, I think she's in Japan. You're in Japan, right?
Yeah.
If you ever come to LA, come on the show with us.
Yeah. All right,
it's an open invitation.
Right, because just cut out the middleman because we're, you know, you're half the show as it is. Right. Because if you look at the comments, you do a great job and very thoughtful and, you know, considered, and so I appreciate it. All right, we got a couple more. Some of them have questions. Weren't you supposed to read member comments in the Friday postgame net, Malcolm? I'm Duo Maxi. No, I'm not. Next.
So Duo Maxi did come here. He was visiting from somewhere in Europe and he came to visit us during the election.
Right, I missed him though. You know, it was disappointing for both of us. All right, Irma, okay. Malcolm's opening script for the Weekly World News should be not we scour the globe for stories, but we scour the Guardian for stories, lol. Well, thank you, Katya. Thank you for giving that away and now making my job even harder. I've been exposed, you're right. Varun PJ says, always enjoy the Friday postgame. Just out of curiosity, I have a behind the scenes question. So I watch the show live sometimes. What happens during the break between the end of the show and start of the post game? I know Cenk is the founder and CEO, but purely as an on-air talent, how valuable is he, do you think? Does he boost viewership by 30-40%?
Maybe that's 45%.
All right, so I can answer those questions.
We've thought about getting rid of Cenk. We'll go in reverse order. We've thought about getting rid of Cenk many times, but he keeps coming back. We change the address, and he finds us like one of those stories about a dog that the family moves away, and the dog gets lost, and that turns up, you know, a year later.
Yeah. So we actually did a statistical analysis of episodes with Cenk and without Cenk. We actually did this whole thing. So we did this twice. Once was a couple years ago, and it turns out that stories covered by Cenk got less views than stories covered by Cenk. And that's largely based on the stories, not based on the hosts. So we did Cenk versus non-Cenk video clips. The non-Cenk clips did about 10% better than Cenk clips. But this is years ago when political stories didn't get as much, you know, play as, like, let's say, a Kim Kardashian story.
Yeah.
But now it's flipped, where Cenk stories do about 10-15% better than the non-Cenk story, because Cenk is covering Trump and politics and, you know the Nazis and Charlottesville and, like, a little bit more hardcore news, which is a lot more popular right now, and less so on, you know, more, you know, the social.
The softer stories.
That we used to cover, yeah.
Interesting.
So the fact is, Cenk has built a platform, and he was the original host with Ben, so that now when other hosts come on, the platform is so strong, we can support them as well. And it's gotten to a point where they do as well as Cenk does.
Right, that's short term, but long term, if Jenks said, I'm leaving, a year from now, our views would not be 10% lower. They would be way lower than
that. It would be a serious hit to the network if Jenks were to leave.
I don't know, he's okay.
The other question is, what happens between the end of the main show and the start of the post game? Is you guys, I mean, I'm not here for it.
You
usually,
mean Monday through Thursday?
Yeah, they go over the stories, they decide what the order is going to be in YouTube and which ones are going to go on YouTube, which ones aren't.
Right. And Jack will give, you know, editing tips. So he will say, hey, there's a part where I was coughing before this, and then I kept coughing again, so just clip that part out. He'll say, by the way, I had a long pause because I had to flip through a bunch of pages. Can you cut that out? So he gives like editors some notes, and then you know we assign certain stories for what we call back pockets for the weekends. So that's what it is. It's like publishing notes and editing notes for publishers and editors.
Yeah, it's like 10 or 15 minutes. Give them a break to go to the bathroom, whatever, and then they can sort of decompress a little bit and then shoot the post game.
But I'll make a comment, which is possibly controversial. It won't be here, but it's preposterous that Jenks. Does that we have not a single other person in the company that he trusts or that has the time and that he trusts who can be the producer who can say this clip yes, this clip no, cut this part out, skip this part. He has to do that every single fucking day.
He doesn't have to.
No, he wants to do that.
He wants to because he thinks no one else can.
No, he wants to do it.
Well, he obviously knows other people can because it's not like he calls in every day when he's not on and says what are the stories.
When he's not on, of course he doesn't do it. Because he didn't even watch the show on that day.
Right, but so he must have enough confidence in the producers to do that.
All right, so now I'm going to say something even more controversial, Dave. Part of the reason why he says that is because before we had professional editors, we had you and Jesus edit, and sometimes you guys would just chop. And there's stuff
sometimes,
in the middle.
That's what we...
Yeah.
Yeah, but we... That's right. That's where it started.
That's right.
But we're not there anymore.
Old habits are hard to break.
It is an old habit.
Once trust is destroyed... It's very difficult to regain it.
No, it's. But Jesus and I are not the ones doing the editing.
Nevertheless, he's been burned too many times.
Your point is correct, Dave. That once when it's done, he should be able to just get up and go, and someone else should have. And maybe it's better for the company to have someone else figure out, you know, which clips should go up on our YouTube channel in which order, which one should be saved for the back pockets for the weekends. And let the editors edit. They can figure it out. And if they're not good, then we'll get new editors, right?
Yeah.
Reassign them or whatever. So you're right, we should be able to do that. But I think Jenks likes it. He likes to be in the weeds and
agreed.
Make those kind of micro decisions. And especially when it comes to content, he loves it.
And you know, it doesn't take that much time. It's 10 minutes, A and B.
And he's gonna do the post-game show after.
I think there's also an element of Jenks. I mean, he likes to micromanage. I mean, if he can, but there's no way he can micromanage everything at TYT anymore. There's all sorts of stuff going on at TYT. He's wholly unaware of a lot of the time, and so but he still has that control over the main show that he can retain. I think that it doesn't cost anything, but it would be a problem if when he went away, the stories that were prioritized and back pocketed were all over the map and were not poorly decided on. But that doesn't happen, so maybe you should talk to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. Jenks is often, you know, out.
Yeah.
Because he's traveling or he's on vacation and everything is done, nothing happens.
It's also like, it's not rocket science.
Yeah, it's not.
No, it's not.
You know, right, but if he wants to do it, it doesn't cost him that much time. All right, let's go on to the next one. We got a couple more. There's mostly people that have some questions. Jacqueline says, is it really true that only 19 people watch this? Ha ha ha, if it is, a lot of people are missing out. Well, that's true. No, it's not true that it could be fewer.
I'm thinking it's more. I think it's up to like 26.
You think 26?
Maybe 28 people.
Well, during sweeps, you know, when we cover a lot of titillating material, we might get up in the high 20s. But, you know, 19 is a safe average. Next. Drat Hart says, I never liked these Friday post games. TYT only does one news show a day versus the morning/noon/5/6/10 p.m. newscast of any network channel. Given that and all the stories that TYT never gets to in the main show, I'd rather we cover some of those. And I'd rather have more than one person, perhaps some of the folks who haven't been on the show that week like Grace, Hassan, Ben, and Francis. But that's just my take on it, no offense to Dave. For everyone who enjoys the way these are now, great, awesome, I'm happy for you. But saying after a long week of work doesn't play with me given TYT only broadcasts for 2 hours a day. With all us new members and $20 million in investment and following a not so long ago multi-million dollar fundraiser, I have to say, where's the beef? And then we have a response. Somebody wrote a response, which I appreciated. Wow. Prison Rod says, I see what you're saying. One, I love Dave Kohler, and two, they still haven't rolled out the hiring for new hosts and teams, etc. They're going to live to 12th of live coverage, whatever. No one knew it was going to be this complicated, LOL. They're in the works, I'm sure. I'm actually studying to become a host and putting bids together because I agree. We need some intelligent and charismatic/high-energy host to contribute regarding other news throughout the day. Having the only main show and the lackluster TYT politics with great content, mind you, with the rebellious inclusionary feeling of aggressive progressives, which I love, isn't enough. A new schedule must happen with great shows that hold up to what makes the flow of live TV work so well. I'd love to be on a Friday postgame, and I'm sure that the other members would love it too. Maybe we could be the next guest to come on. It would be a fantastic idea. Dave, Steve, or Malcolm, plus a TYT Army member. This will give us the ultimate stage to voice how we feel and how we see stories and commentary on TYT, etc. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. First, the last question, Karen Ola gets to be the first one. That's her name, right? Karen Ola. And other than that, then we'll consider you maybe, but otherwise, no, no chance. But the question, I just thought it was funny that first commenter saying that it's only 2 hours, they work for 2 hours a day and then they're out of here. I mean, come on, they're too busy. You know, like, because what it takes to put together 2 hours worth of news show is pretty substantial, actually, it turns out. And it's not just like they waltz in here at 2:45, they sit down and start talking to the camera at 5 o'clock, they're gone, like just a wisp of ghost, like fully dissipating in their shape.
But he or she, I don't know, it makes a fair point. And we are going to expand our programming. So we're going to launch a couple of new shows, a morning show. I think John Adderall is the host of that one. And we'll cover a bunch of different news stories in the morning. And then we're going to do a late night show. And that's going to be like a rotating group of folks who are going to host that one. So we'll have a morning show, the regular TYT show, an evening show. And plus, we're going to squeeze in a couple of other shows in between. So we're going to have a lot of programming. So we're going to do 12 hours a day. And it's going to be awesome.
Stay tuned, literally. Okay, so now I think that's all the feedback we have. Thank you very much, everybody who comments. We appreciate it. I'm sorry if I didn't get your comments in. I tried to get as many as I could without annoying Dave and Steve too much and boring the audience. But we're going to move on to another beloved feature we have here at I forgot to tell you about the picture. God, I'm the worst host.
Well, now you remember.
The image behind us comes from San Cristobal Island in the Galapagos, which on this date, Steve guessed it correctly and then took it back.
I took it back. I'm the worst.
And David guessed Scotland or something, which seems unlikely. But the reason we chose this is that in this date in 1835, Charles Darwin arrived on the Beagle to the Galapagos, and he first made landfall, or he first stepped onto the Galapagos on San Cristobal Island, which is here. And so I thought I would pay tribute to that.
But is that a question? Castle on the back? A wall?
No.
I don't think so.
That's why I said Scotland.
No, I think that's a natural formation.
Then I would have said Galapagos.
Quick question. Uh-oh. Where is Charles Darwin buried?
You know, we already talked about this.
I know you know.
No, I don't know.
The answer is Grant's tomb.
Somewhere in London.
That's true.
That is correct.
All right.
Yeah.
It's Westminster Abbey.
That is correct.
Which is interesting because, of course, he was
vilified by religious people.
Yeah. Although he was deeply religious himself, so it's...
Where is Galileo buried? I don't know the answer.
I don't know that
at the Vatican.
Yeah. All right, so let's get on to the next fun game we have, which is Weekly World News. Weekly World News! All right, for those who haven't seen it before, I scan the globe to bring you stories that are not covered by the mainstream media, not covered by TYT, but that I think are important, noteworthy, entertaining, whatever. And then I put it together in a quiz format for Dave and Steve to embarrass themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's where I know last time I said I was confident that you guys were going to do well, but I think this week it's true, it's real. Last time I was, you didn't do so great. You got like 2 out of 5 last time, or 1 out of 5. Dave, you did pretty well last time,
last
I think.
Last time I came back after a few weeks of...
Yeah, you boned up, you studied, and now that Katie has exposed me in my scouring of The Guardian. I have to use other news sources. Thanks a lot, Katie. All right, so the first one comes to us from Burma/Myanmar, which is right there. I think hopefully we know the main story that's been going on.
The Rohingyas.
Very good. Okay, so let's go to the question, though. Recent newspaper accounts accused the Burmese government of committing what offense as part of ethnic cleansing of the nation's Muslim Rohingya population? Is it A, planting landmines in the path of fleeing Rohingya along the nation's border with Bangladesh? B, launching chemical weapons attacks on remote or otherwise isolated Rohingya villages? C, kidnapping Rohingya women and children to be sold into sex slavery in Vietnam? Or D, beating captured Rohingya with Burmese leader Aung San Suu Kyi's Nobel Peace Prize? I like it because of the music. This is a tough one, so we're not, I don't know if it's tough, but it's a lot of words. So we have an answer from Steve and we have an answer from Dave.
A is correct.
We have an answer of A and an answer of C. What is the correct answer, Irma? Correct answer is A, planting landmines in the path of fleeing. But we gotta leave it up for me to read it. So I can read the answer, Irma. It's planting landmines in the path of fleeing Rohingya along the nation's border with Bangladesh. There we go. All right, so I think we have an image of some fleeing Rohingya. So what's going on is that more than 300,000 members of Burma's Rohingya ethnic minority have been pouring across the border into Bangladesh. Burma, I think we got a picture, Irma, there's one. And after a brutal military crackdown, the UN human rights chief has said is tantamount to ethnic cleansing, with hundreds dead and thousands of villages burned to the ground. And now there are allegations that the Burmese government or military is planting landmines along the border I'm not sure whether it's to detonate as the Rohingya are fleeing or to deter them from coming back once they're gone. So I think we have a couple of quotes from the article that I took this from. We'll get to her in a minute. But let's go to the. So Bangladeshi Foreign Secretary Shahidul Haq said in an interview Wednesday that the government has reliable information that Burma's security forces laid landmines across a section of the Bangladesh-Myanmar border. Note, I got this from the story from the Washington Post, not from the Guardian. A spokesman for Burma's government, however, countered that it was very difficult to verify who was planting the explosive devices at the border and suggested that it may have been done by the Rohingya insurgent group Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army, or ARSA. So what's going on here is that we've got these competing accounts of why there are landmines along the border. And then there are others who are suggesting that these landmines have been there for decades after previous conflicts, the government says that if we investigate it, we can find out who really is responsible. A Burmese military source said that they were actually laid along the border in the 1990s. Now, the woman we showed that photo of, Aung San Suu Kyi, you may know is the Burmese leader. She was a longtime political prisoner. We got her image, Irma, where is that? Yeah. And now she is she's not the president or the prime minister, but she's a Nobel Peace Prize winner, but she is being widely criticized. I think we have the quote about that also, right? I'll get onto this. So she's been criticized for her handling of the refugee crisis. And then the next quote is about the clashes with the Buddhist villagers. In 2012 resulted in more than 100,000 Rohingya being confined in camps, a humanitarian crisis that has festered. Critics have charged that Suu Kyi has done little to address the problem since her National League for Democracy won the country's first largely democratic election in 2015, but she has little power over the country's generals who still control the security forces. So people are blaming her, but it's not entirely clear how responsible she is because she doesn't really run the country. The military still runs the country, but she does have some power. And she's a former Nobel Peace Prize winner, and yet there is this widespread ethnic cleansing that's going on. And this is a huge story I wanted to include in this because it's not getting enough press. We did get covered on the TYT last week once, but it deserves more coverage, I think.
So apparently she has her hands tied, because if she speaks out, then she might have even less power.
Right.
If she doesn't speak out, then she's not doing anything,
yeah.
Right? So what does she do? I don't know, it's a tough question. And some say she's being politically expedient and it's just to save herself. Others are saying that she's being practical.
Or that she actually supports the ethnic cleansing.
Yes,
She's just not doing anything about it because she tacitly agrees with it.
Right.
So what I didn't realize, but that the whole conflict, the most recent, the reason why so many Rohingya are fleeing, it's based on that rebel group that was mentioned, the ARSA, these Rohingya rebels attacked dozens of police posts and an army camp on August 25th, killing 12, and that's what triggered the cataclysmic military response. So there is an insurgency going on. How serious it is or how much of a serious threat it is to the Burmese government is an open question. So maybe they're just using that as an excuse to do something they wanted to
and
do already.
This has been happening for a long time. And a couple of years ago, the New York Times reported, I think it was Christoph was there, they did a little documentary. And the you call them Rohingya, I say Rohingya.
Okay.
I don't know what's the correct pronunciation. Anyway, they're being confined into basically concentration camps.
Yes.
And they were just herded together, and they were just dying. They had no medical care except for these. I think people are crazy to join Doctors Without Borders, but crazy in a good way, like mm-hmm. crazy brave yeah. people. They are the only ones who are there to provide any level of medical support for these people, and it's. I don't know, it's shocking how brutal the Burmese government has been towards the Rohingya. And it's just happening continuously and nothing's being done about it.
Well, I think the Burmese government has a lot sort of in common with the North Korean government, whereas they have demonstrated that they can do whatever they want to their own people and the world is really not going to yeah. do anything about it. And it's a sad story, but it deserves more attention, and the more attention we can bring to it, the more likely that the Rohingya can get some relief, and the world can bring whatever moral disapprobation we can down on the Burmese military and on Aung San Suu Kyi. And look, if she doesn't do anything, you know, the consequence to her doing something is she loses political power. So it goes. That's she has a responsibility as a. But nowadays they're just giving away Nobel Peace Prizes to anybody. I suppose Trump will probably get the next one. Anyway, let's move on to the next story, which is another comes to us from the Ivory Coast, which, as you all know, is right there. And what is the question, Irma? It is. Rainforests in the Ivory Coast are being devastated by the illicit production of what? Is it A, coffee beans, B, cocoa beans, C, vanilla beans, or D, lima beans? What kind of beans? Dave is leading. We currently have Dave in the lead, 1-0. And see if Steve can storm back.
By the way, D is not funny in any way.
It's in jelly beans. That would have been
should have been jelly beans. You're right. Actually, I need to have somebody help me with these. Jelly beans wouldn't have been that funny, but it would have been better. So we have an answer of A and an answer of B. What is the correct answer, Irma? The correct answer is B. Steve ties it up. So now we're 1-1. Very good. All right. So what's the deal with this story? This is another depressing story, by the way. I like to give you plenty to make you think that the world is going to shit. So the world's chocolate industry is driving deforestation on a devastating scale in West Africa. Cocoa traders who sell to companies like Mars, Nestle, Mondelez, and other big brands buy beans grown locally inside illegally inside protected areas of the Ivory Coast, where rainforest cover has been reduced by more than 80% since 1960. And there's an image. I mean, it's yeah. So the illegal product is mixed in with clean beans in the supply chain, so that companies like Mars and Nestle buy some that are grown legally and mix in with others that are grown illegally. But as much as 40% of the world's cocoa comes from the Ivory Coast, which I didn't know. But there's been a long. There's an example of cocoa beans being dried in an Ivory Coast village there or wherever it is. But rainforests have been cleared according to Ivory Coast for many years now. And we have a. This is a quote from the story. Up to 70% of the world's cocoa is produced by 2 million farmers in a belt that stretches from Sierra Leone to Cameroon. But Ivory Coast and Ghana are the giants, the world's first and second biggest producers. They are also the biggest victims of deforestation. Ivory Coast is losing its forests at a faster rate than any other African country. Less than 4% of the country is covered in rainforest, once one quarter was. And then go on to the next one, Irma. The ballooning global demand for chocolate means that if nothing is done, by 2030 there'll be no forest left, according to the environmental group Mighty Earth, which today publishes an investigation into deforestation caused by chocolate. The final insulting irony is that locals are so poor they could never afford to eat a Mars bar. There are other complications. Like, this has been going on for decades, and it's driven by Western desire for the Western market and demand. And farmers believe that recently deforested soil produces the biggest beans, so they have an added interest to remove the trees one by one, planting cocoa as they go. The big companies that are their buyers are saying the right things. Companies like Mars and Nestle and Mondelez, which I'd never heard of before, and Hershey and Cargill, all of which buy a lot of cocoa beans. They are all quoted in this article about saying they're doing everything they can, and we only want to buy properly sourced and so on and so forth. But So they've all pledged to end deforestation and forest degradation in a collective statement published in June, but it's a vague promise without a whole lot of specifics. And the complications of trying to get these farmers who have lived in these areas out and to tell them to stop growing cocoa, it's difficult. We have one more quote here. None of the companies said they would support a moratorium on deforestation cocoa, however, despite the fact that one on soy worked well to stop deforestation in the Amazon. Neither did they say, oh, Irma, what are you doing to me? Neither did they say they would commit to 100% shade grown cocoa, which is another possibility. So, you know, there's a lot of back and forth about how difficult it's going to be and the companies, whether they're really doing anything or it's just lip service. But then the last quote we have, I think, is an interesting one. Privately, activists have been warned not to touch cocoa, the backbone of the country's economy, whose vertebrae reach the highest level of society. Those who do can get into serious trouble. In 2004, Guy-André Kaffir, a French-Canadian journalist working on a story about cocoa and corruption, disappeared. He is believed to have been killed. So there's, you know, we have poor people in the Ivory Coast who are destroying the rainforest to service a Western market, and we just go about our business eating chocolate and love chocolate. Chocolate. Ooh, it's so good. And yet it's contributing to the deforestation of places like the Ivory Coast and Ghana. And it's hypocritical of us to say, hey, you shouldn't be growing that anymore. You shouldn't be cutting down your rainforest to grow cocoa because we're the ones who are eating it. And most of the people who are growing the cocoa beans and chopping down the forest could not afford to eat a single candy bar anyway. So
this is a super interesting story. I didn't even know about this, but
you got it right anyway. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, I actually knew about the cocoa, but I didn't know that it was causing so much deforestation in Ivory Coast in particular. So I knew there was a general issue with cocoa beans there. But I imagine what's happening is that locals who are actually working and picking the cocoa and growing the cocoa, they're making no money. And it gets all funneled up. So there's a couple of very, very rich folks in the Ivory Coast who are taking all the profits and making sure that the system is maintained. The Western companies, I bet, are trying their, I believe them. I believe they don't want illegal cocoa beans mixed in with the good ones. But if that's gonna drive up the prices too much, maybe they don't care as much, right? So there are all kinds of concerns. I know when I was in the handbag business before I was in TYT, one thing I tried really hard to do was to source, responsibly obtain products for handbags. Yeah. And it was really, really hard.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I can hire a firm in China that would go and do these inspections, but they just get paid off.
Yeah.
So then they lie to me and say, yeah, everything's great. And then it turns out it's not. I physically went to a factory to make sure that the workers were getting paid properly. And the woman who was like, she's like a mid-level manager and she spoke English and she was like my main point of contact. She claimed that she was making $800 a month, which was pretty good for their standards. But then privately she's told me it's not true. That she's on the books for making $800 a month, but they actually only pay her $300. So, what am I supposed to do?
Yes,
it's really, really hard. So, I'm not excusing these corporate giants. They have more resources than I ever did when I ran a very small company. But it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, the system is set up.
Yeah.
In a way that if everyone follows their incentives, then the rainforest is fucked.
There's exploitation of labor and natural resources.
Yeah.
Always.
You got anything else, Chipper, to add to the story?
Where's the Ivory Coast Chocolate Avengers? We need that.
Well, maybe they should go back to producing ivory.
No? Yeah, that'll be great. No one suffers in that trade.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. Where is the next one coming to us from, Irma? Indonesia. Oh, yeah, this is a
good... I've been there.
Okay, what's the question? I hope you get this one. Lawyers representing PETA recently agreed to settle a landmark lawsuit involving what Indonesian animal? Was it A, a Celebes ox whose image was used in a soap commercial? B, a macaque monkey that took a widely distributed selfie? C, a rare Sumatran tiger illegally trapped and smuggled into the United States? Or D, grumpy cat over the release of his notorious sex tape? It's a test of how good my alternatives are. We both have an answer, and what is they both say B, Irma. What is the correct answer? It is B, a macaque monkey that took a widely distributed selfie. So this is a fascinating story.
I think I know the story.
Yeah.
This might have made TYT. Yeah.
Did it? Well, I don't watch. Sure. I don't care for it. I don't watch it. So what's the? Let's show us the cell. There it is. This is a famous image. And what happened is, this is a Naruto. Was in 2011, was just an anonymous macaque in the jungles of Indonesia. And then one day.
What did you just say? Anonymous what?
he happened upon a wildlife photographer's camera and snapped a photo of himself. And then it became wildly popular, meme worthy, and so on and so forth. But it also launched a copyright dispute. Who owns that image? Mm-hmm. The guy, the photographer, or the monkey? Who took it? So we have one text graphic here for you. On Monday, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals announced a settlement with photographer David Slater, ending a lawsuit it filed on Naruto's behalf. Under the deal, Slater agreed to donate 25% of future revenue from the photo to groups that protect crested macaques and their habitat in Indonesia. Both sides also asked the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to dismiss the case and throw out a lower court decision that said animals cannot own copyrights, the Associated Press reports. So this is the question, is whether an animal can own copyright.
Animals are innocent.
Animals are innocent. Also, if the monkey owns the copyright, how do we decide what the monkey wants to do with the proceeds? Maybe the monkey doesn't want to share the proceeds with the rest of his fellow macaques. Maybe he'd be happy to see them, exterminated. Last year, initially ruling, District Judge William Orrick wrote in a tentative opinion that that the U.S. copyright cannot be held by animals. But then we have this final text quote for you. The U.S. Copyright Office, since the dispute began, has specifically listed a photograph taken by a monkey as an example of an item that cannot be copyrighted. That also extends to artworks by elephants, in case anybody was wondering. Similarly, Wikipedia's parent organization refused to remove Naruto's photo from its commons, citing the same reasons. So precedent is saying, hey, the monkey can't own the photo, that photo, and how is the monkey going to give, agree to let you use the rights to the photo and so on and so forth.
Well, I think it's total bullshit because the monkey took the photo.
The monkey took the photo.
He didn't use his camera. If I take your camera and take a picture of myself, do I own that picture? Because I took it. It's your camera, right?
I think it. You own it. You took the photo. I think it's your.
But if I took your camera without your consent and took a picture, I own that picture.
If I borrow your paintbrush and paint the picture, do you own the picture? The camera is just a tool. The piece of art is the photograph that has been produced.
Well, no, that's different. When you click the button, that's different from actually creating an image through your design.
Well, no, because photography is a creative art, and maybe the monkey didn't,
the final
set up
product,
the lighting. And
the final product rests on that device. When you steal Steve's paintbrush and paint a picture, the final product is completely separate.
I'm just, arguing, but this is something, this is actually a debate that has come up.
All I know is if Ed O'Bannon can't own his own image of his days at UCLA, and the NCAA can own everything, then Naruto's rights fall below Ed
O'Bannon's. Below Ed O'Bannon's. Yeah. Well, the happy solution, resolution, is that they're going to split the proceeds. But I personally think Naruto, if he left his own devices, he'd probably take the proceeds and turn into that fat baboon. You remember that the fat, what is it, was it a baboon or a monkey?
That overweight
monkey we had. Were you there for that week? There was one where we covered this giant, in Thailand, I think, this giant fat monkey that people had been feeding.
Don't fat shame monkeys. That's
I know,
so
that's
wrong.
People were that saying so that we fat shame the monkey. All right, so we're.
Animals are innocent.
There it is. Thank you. All right, let's go on. Where are we going to
I'm
next?
I'm just glad you stopped talking about your cock, Georgia Allen.
Animals are innocent.
All right, this is Georgia. This is this one's for
Georgia's over next to South Carolina.
This one's for Dave. This question is for Dave. What is the question, Irma? Coming to us from Georgia, a Canadian competing in the recent World Cup Chess Championship in Tbilisi was criticized by event organizers for doing what? Is it A, repeatedly coughing during a match, B, dropping excessive dandruff on the board, C, wearing shorts, or D, dabbing after every move? I like that idea.
She don't know this, unfortunately.
I don't follow the numbering is wrong. This is not number 5, this is number 4, I'm sorry. I got them out of order.
I was cracking myself up with a joke that I told to myself in my head.
About macaque? Are you talking about macaque? Are you thinking about macaque again?
Yeah, I was thinking, when are they going to send macaques to Uranus? can send a monkey to the moon. They can send him a cock to Uranus.
This is why I argue that the Young Turks is not a professional enterprise, because the people who run this company are children.
But that's a hilarious joke. All come children. On.
With cock to Uranus. It'll be
the if first. They can send a chimpanzee to the moon, why can't they send my cock to Uranus, huh? Why not?
Well, you can do it for them.
You can. You know, with that attitude, you never will. But I hope that someday you do. All right, so we have both of our answers are A. What is the correct answer, Irma? Repeatedly coughing during matches, their answer. The correct answer is wearing shorts. He wore shorts. How dare he? Anton Kovalyov, 25-year-old, pulled out of the World Cup in Georgia over the weekend because an organizer complained to him about the shorts and called him a gypsy. He's a Canadian. He's of Ukrainian extraction. I believe we have an image of him. There he is playing in his shorts. And then another one, we have another image where after he'd been kicked out. He claims they're not shorts, actually. We can debate. But so apparently an organizer berated him about his shorts just minutes before his third round match. And so the Chess Federation of Canada is complaining. He says, and I quote, "The issue was not the shorts, but how I was treated." I think we have, this is part of a, yeah, okay. So the Chess Federation of Canada has filed a complaint with the World Federation arguing Kovalyov was treated unfairly. He claimed that organizer Zurab, I'm not even gonna try, was hostile and aggressive and used the gypsy slur as an insult. The grandmaster said he was subjected to bullying and racial taunts and decided to leave instead of doing something stupid. He forfeited his prize money in the process, and in a later Facebook post said his family was out $3,000 because of his decision. Know what? I got this from the Toronto Star, not from the Guardian. So he claims that the guy really was giving him a hard time. The guy says, look, I talked to him beforehand about the shorts, and he said he would go try to change. Kovalyov says, I didn't have anything else to wear. I didn't bring anything. This is all I brought, so this is what I'm wearing. And it was really not just about the shorts. It was about this guy giving him a hard time and calling him names. And then I have, is there a dress code? Yes. There is a sort of informal dress code in chess. They want the players to appear camera friendly and photogenic and not dress in a manner that brings the game into disrepute, or dress in a manner that does elevate its status to where we'd like it to be seen, Canada Chess Federation board member Hal Bond said. But the code isn't very well written, or isn't well written, and some of the codes are vague. So my question to you, Dave, is, you know, you're a chess player. Do you feel like a guy wearing shorts like those should have been, you know, berated and essentially kicked out of the tournament?
Not berated, of course, but at that level, yeah, you shouldn't wear shorts. Of course, the dress code should be vague because it's hard to write a good dress code.
As we've discussed in the past on this very
show. But shorts shouldn't be allowed in a chess match at that level.
Are gypsies known to wear shorts? Is that a thing that gypsies do?
That's just an insult.
I think it's a general insult, okay.
And, but if he's going to get kicked out and get berated, they should have a strict code. I mean, you can say no shorts.
Well, that part, yeah, that to be clear.
So you're saying he shouldn't have been kicked out for wearing shorts if they don't have a code that specifically says no shorts. But
they or you should think, have a code that says no shorts. And they probably do. It might be vague, but he should know better than to wear shorts to a high world champion, World Cup level.
Right, but chess players, not necessarily the most socially adroit people. You know, he might think it's perfectly fine. It's totally inappropriate, obviously, but
I was kicked out recently for wearing shorts.
Kicked out of?
Of the Ritz High Tea in London.
Really?
Yeah. They wouldn't let me in.
Yeah. You can't get into the Vatican wearing shorts either.
Yeah.
So that's, Dave is a chess player, for those of you who don't know, he's a chess aficionado. You play, do you still play in the office anymore, or is it now that you're not
in
next
the office?
To,
I don't. And plus, when I do, it's online instead of with a board.
But there, I think like Tim Collins and Carlos still play.
Yeah,
I think
so. Right.
So there's still some chess going on, although not as much as there used to be. All right, let's get to the last question so we can get to other stuff we have to do. We're going to England for this one. And the question is, municipal workers in London are expecting to take 3 weeks to remove what? Is it A, a giant 130-ton mass plugging up the East London sewer system? B, debris from the demolition of the fire-damaged Grenfell Tower? C, an invasive species of gophers that were introduced to and have since overrun London's Victoria Park? Or D, the 30-inch pole from Prime Minister Theresa May's backside?
What do you have against Theresa May?
I don't know if we have time. She's kind of stiff.
Yeah.
That's my point. Should I have said jelly beans? All right, do we have answers? Dave has an answer.
I have no idea. I'm going to go with this one.
All right, we have an answer of A from Dave and B from Steve. What is the correct answer? It's A, a giant 130-ton mass plugging up the East London sewer system. And it's called a Fatberg. And it's as big as like 3 football fields or 2 soccer fields or whatever. And we have a video. Let's watch the video.
Take it out.
All right, so I saw another video where they take it like, well, okay, so first of all, it's disgusting, yes, but it's diapers and like wet wipes that are flushed down the toilet and then just oil and fat that people, you know how, I don't know, did you do this or when you were a kid, your parents did this, whatever, have a little can that you collect fat in and then you throw it out.
It congeals, right?
Yeah, it congeals and you throw it out. But a lot of people don't do that, they just pour it down the sink and this is what winds up. 130 tons and then we have, yeah, there's, but so they have to take, break off chunks of it. It's like concrete. And then they have to break it up, they put it into bags and haul it out, which is why it's gonna take 3 weeks.
And it just goes in the landfill?
Yeah, they just landfill. Yeah, they take it, yeah, they just dump it somewhere. But I love that they call it a Fatberg. I went to like tennis camp with a kid named Fatberg.
And 3 weeks is not that bad. I think that's a great
it's
job.
It's pretty good.
It was just a couple of guys, but I think it's a lot of people working on this. And they got to haul it out of there like it's like the Great Escape, you know, where they get dirt out of it.
But again, that's a lot. 3 soccer pitches long?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's the biggest Fatberg in England's history. It's a Fatberg. I love that. All right, so that's the Weekly World News. Dave, I think Dave, what do you win? Like 3-2, 4-3,
I think 2-1. No,
by one. I won by one.
Yeah. You won by one. But you
know, I think it's 3-2.
3-2.
3-2.
It's pretty well.
That's not bad.
Steve, yeah. I mean, how did you do at home? I hope you played along. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you. Now you know what a Fatberg is for our English viewers. I don't know if that's getting a lot of play. That story in England.
I wonder if we get those. In the US.
I was too distracted from the macaque joke. I could not think straight in the last.
You, yeah, you. I next time I'll wear shorts and I'll distract you. But I think we have a little time to do a couple of totally true or totally bullshit. So let's get to that, Irma. Can we?
Finally, a good intro.
There we go. Finally. So, in case you don't know what totally true or totally bullshit is, for those of you who are new to the Friday Post Game. I'm gonna posit something, and then the panelists are all gonna decide, is it totally true or is it totally bullshit? And the motif, the leitmotif of this show or this episode or this segment is we don't do nuance until we do. So it's either yes or no, it's a totally true or totally bullshit. And let's bring up the first one, Irma. Did you guys get a chance to look at these?
I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. By this time next year, all Senate Democrats will have endorsed single payer health care. Totally true or totally bullshit, I ask you, Steve O. Totally, all the Senate.
Totally bullshit.
Totally bullshit.
Totally bullshit. Not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Because there are those saying it is going to happen. And why don't you think it's going to happen?
They're still sticking with a tired loser theme or meme of we love the ACA, we have to protect it.
All right, so that's
so that. It's Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi. Pelosi's not in the Senate, but Diane Feinstein. Yeah, they have come out on record over the last couple of months saying that they are opposed to single payer, and they've said things that are too hard to take back. Mm-hmm. Things like it'll never ever happen. I think Hillary said that too.
Yeah.
So I don't see it happening. Maybe 2 years from now, 4 years from now, but not in the next year.
Okay, but realistic. Well, okay, Dave. What about you? Totally true or totally bullshit?
It's totally, totally bullshit. Yeah, there's way too many senators who are just flat out against it for them to turn in 1 year.
Yeah.
All right, well, I was going to say totally bullshit, but I'm going to say totally true now, because just to be a contrarian, I'm going to say that the power of Bernie is going to be too strong and irresistible. And I can't believe that you guys are such naysayers about Bernie and what he can accomplish, because the fact that it is where it is right now is incredible. We've got people like Max Baucus, who's not in the Senate anymore, but that he's, when just a few years ago he was saying he was in the never, ever, 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 ever camp. The people who are signing on to it now are big surprise. Joe Manchin is making, you know, intimations that he might support it. So
I mean, Charles Krauthammer supports it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he supports it, but he thinks it's inevitable that we'll get there.
Yeah.
No, it's more of a timing issue than it is anything else.
But I was going to say no, because I think there are going to be a couple of holdouts. But I'll say yes, and that just the groundswell of support among Democrats, that, I mean, the people who are supporting it already are feeling the burn, and they're recognizing that this is happening, that the public
it's interesting
has
to me.
Turned in favor. The public interest for a single payer system is so great that they can't just ignore it anymore.
It's interesting to me that those who have presidential aspirations have come out in support of single payer. Because I think they realize that this is an issue that they have to be right on with the voters. Now, they could always go back later and say, well, you know, we got to study this and study that. We'll table this, we'll table that, we'll get back to it later, blah, 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 and delay forever. But, you know, at least lip service wise, they will say that they're in favor of it.
Yeah.
But there are those who won't even go that far. And I think they will, just not in the next year.
I'm going to suggest that by the opposition to Trump and the 2018 elections will compel everybody in the Senate and all the Senate Democrats and maybe even some Republicans, who knows, to get on board. All right, we still have time. What's the next one? Oh yeah, this one. That's not the next one. I don't think that's not it either. I'm pretty sure that's a fat bird. That's a piece of. Okay. If you don't think Jemele Hill should be fired by ESPN for her comments about Donald Trump, you must also think that Google should not have fired James Damore. I don't know how to pronounce his name. And totally true or totally bullshit. I go to you on this one, Dave.
I don't remember all the details of the James Damore thing, but I kind of remember thinking he shouldn't have been fired. So totally true.
So do you think Jemele Hill should keep her job?
Yeah.
All right. Steve, totally true or totally bullshit?
Totally bullshit. It's two totally different things. So Jemele Hill went after a public figure who is our sitting president. Totally fair. Totally fair. And you know, she should be admonished if there's any indication that she was speaking on behalf of ESPN. She made it clear that it was her own opinions. Totally.
She didn't say it on air from ESPN. Yeah. She tweeted it. It's a tweet, right. So it was not part of her job.
Well, did she tweet it from her personal account or from the ESPN account?
I don't know if she has.
I don't know.
I don't think they're different.
But assuming that that it was her personal account, assuming that's from her personal account, it's fine. Even if it's not from her personal account, I don't know that she should be fired, warning, all that kind of stuff. What James Damore did is different. He was attacking his colleagues. Half of them, or you know, however percentage women make up, saying that they have some sort of like genetic predisposition to be inferior at their jobs. So that's a totally different thing than attacking a public figure. So I see them as two separate things. You can be in favor of one, but not the other. I'm not saying that James Damore should have been fired. I'm just saying that it's okay to think that he should have been fired, while Jemele Hill should not be fired, and that's consistent in your logical.
I'm with Steve. That's totally bullshit. That first of all, everyone getting on Jemele Hill's case is they're suggesting that she insulted Donald Trump. Yeah. I don't know. Does Donald Trump think she insulted him?
Yeah, I find that.
I mean, you know, he's come out. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. We have a resolution in Congress that's voted on, the unanimous resolution condemning white nationalism, and we don't know whether he's going to sign it or not.
So here's
the
thing.
So he may not think by saying calling a white nationalist is such a bad thing.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. People who are offended by what Jemele Hill did, by calling Donald Trump a white supremacist, what are you mad about? Are you mad that she said that he was a white supremacist when he is not a white supremacist, and you think white supremacists are terrible people? And you're saying, don't make him the same as these terrible people. Well, say that. Say, white supremacists are awful, awful human beings. Don't call my president that, because he is not that.
Right. This is. Right?
But I don't think they're saying that, right?
Right. Well, it was his administration. It was Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was his spokesman, who's saying that she should be fired.
Right.
But why?
But why?
Yeah.
Right. So if you are a white supremacist and you get called out for it, just own it and say, yeah, I am a white supremacist. I think white people are superior. We should have supremacy over other races because of our race, of our whiteness. Just say it. Are you embarrassed? Are you scared? What is it that you're running from? So what are you mad about? If you support Donald Trump because of his white supremacy, then just say it. You're goddamn right, Jemele Hill. He is a white supremacist because we are, and we think we're superior. But their anger, I don't understand the anger. Explain the anger to me. Is it because you are unfairly called something that you are not? Because you think what you're called is a bad thing? Well, then say it. Say white supremacy is terrible, so don't call me that. Because I hate that. That's a terrible thing, so don't call me that. And if you call me that, because I'm not that, then that's offensive. Right? But explain the anger. I don't understand where the anger is coming from. Is it because they got it right? Is that what you're angry about? Because you are white supremacist and they called you out on it? Then that's silly because then they're correct. They're being factually correct. So what are you mad about? So I want the anger to be explained.
Yeah, it's clearly, or did you just see an opportunity and there's no real right. explanation for
there's
it?
There's really
just
no
trying to exploit it. I don't know. I mean, do you have any? I agree with you also with the James Damore thing. I mean, he essentially created a hostile work environment with his colleagues, and that you're supposed to work with him after he said that you're intellectually inferior to him and can't do the job that you're expected to do.
Someone at TYT said that women here are by their genetic makeup, on average, not every woman. You know, I'm gonna be fair, not everyone, but on average, women are inferior to men at their jobs here at TYT.
Editing video.
At editing, right? That would be outrageous and unacceptable. And what does it say to me or to Cenk or to Dave or anyone here in management if we just let it go? Then we're kind of almost validating it. And how do the women editors, how would they feel? They would feel abandoned. So we got to do something, right? And I totally would disagree with that position. And I don't want that guy working here. If that's what you think, then I don't want you working here. You don't have a right to work here. You can think whatever you want to think. You can say what you want to say, but you don't have a right to also work here. So gone, right? But if that person was attacking a public figure, I wouldn't fire the person for attacking a public figure. I would say, hey, bring it down. Don't use company, Twitter handles or whatever it may be. But I wouldn't fire that person for attacking a singular public figure.
Although that's why here at TYT, we don't allow anybody who's on staff to post anything controversial on Twitter. Nobody ever does that. All right. Let's go to the next one. We had a natural disasters. Let's find a totally true or totally bullshit that relates to it. If you don't think companies should be allowed to price gouge during natural disasters, you don't believe in the free market. Totally true or totally bullshit. I ask you, Dave.
Well, I know this is coming from one of these recent made-up controversies, although it's a valid question.
The hurricane, advance of the hurricane, specifically, I think United or Delta or somebody was, one of those airlines was given a hard time, got a lot of bad press because their tickets for their flights out of Florida the prices were skyrocketing. And then there's also the water, that was for Harvey. There was they were charging $15 for a bottle of water, whatever.
Disasters. Yeah. Some people want to raise the price
plywood,
of essential goods.
But I
suppose that's true, but I don't. Totally free market would allow you to price gouge, but most intelligent people realize there should be some sort of controls on the free market.
Yeah, so. Well, what I don't understand is, I mean, if you're going to be consistent and you say that in times of great stress or when people are in danger, you shouldn't be taking advantage of that. But like at the same time, in Flint, Michigan, if people can't afford to pay their water bill, even though they're getting poisoned water, we're going to shut off your water just because you can't pay for it. Isn't that doing the same? Essentially doing the same thing? People are in danger, at risk, and we don't care. We're going to make them suffer because they can't afford whatever we're going to charge them for this basic service. I don't know. Maybe it's not.
I'm lost in what question you're asking me, but I answered the question.
But like, if you can't take advantage of people in crisis situations,
right.
Then why is it okay to take advantage of people in general? Why is it okay to let the market decide things?
What Malcolm is saying is
that people can't afford.
If you can't take advantage of them in an acute situation, then why are you allowed to take advantage of them in a chronic situation?
Yeah, like right? with healthcare. Why should people have to give up their chance for healthcare when if they can't afford it, when that is potentially life-threatening?
Well, I totally agree. Yeah. I think that if you are one of those free market fanatics, then you should be perfectly fine with price gouging during emergencies. You know, if I have one bottle of water, and there's no bottles of water left in all of California, and you want it, why should I charge you $1.50? I should charge as much as I want.
Or if you, right? even if you have 1,000 right? bottles of water, yeah. if you're the only yeah. one who has them.
Well, I was a smart one who hoarded all the water. Sad day for you. Now I got to pay me whatever I command. That's the free market. But you're right, Dave. Any reasonable person would want some restrictions and regulations on free trade and trade and commerce and the markets. It's the crazy people who are saying. And even they don't mean it.
Right, they're right? just making arguments.
It's just an expedient argument for that, for whatever position that they're taking.
And to screw over poor people generally. Yeah.
But if you did want to get extreme people. And you really believe in free markets and you believe that some shop owner can price gouge during a crisis, the way it should work is when the crisis subsides, everyone gets together and boycotts that shop owner because he's a jerk, and then it's actually bad for his business.
That's right.
If there were free-flowing, complete information,
right.
if it were easy to go to alternative stores, it doesn't
but
work.
But that's not the world we live in.
Well, that's, again, the problem with the free market and capitalism is that if it's unregulated, unfettered, you're going to, at some point, get a monopoly. And yeah. then you have all of that's gone. You don't have the competition. You don't have the free market. You have nothing. You just have, you know, a monopoly or, you know, duopoly, whatever it may be.
All right, let's go to the last one, Irma, before we go. We got the last totally true or totally bullshit, which is... it's unprofessional for any employee, least of all a company executive, to fall asleep in the middle of the workplace. Totally true or totally bullshit. I think we have an image with this one.
Oh, great. I know what this is going to be. This you didn't put in the email, by the
no,
way.
I didn't put it in the email. This is added to the last
where's
minute.
The, where's the where's, picture?
Where's the picture, Irma? Do we have a picture?
Jesus sold me out.
That, for those of you who made it through this whole post game, is Dave Kohler asleep in the control room. In his defense, he is not the only person who sleeps there. You actually had seen other people sleeping there.
In fact, I cited them before I went in.
Yeah, you said, hey, look, Jacory sleeps here. It looks comfortable. And you can go and you can listen to the show.
There's two offenses there. One is the sleeping. The other one is a manspreading. What? Come on, Dave.
What if a woman sleeping. Wanted to sit there and sleep there with you, Dave?
Disgusting.
Also, the photo is terrible, which I took.
You should have photoshopped
the macaque.
Yeah. Jeez. Well, there's a long tradition of people at TYT taking photos of Dave while he sleeps. We used to do it at Current. And I don't know if people took photos at Wilshire. Yeah. Nobody begrudges you your catnap, Dave. Not really.
So for those who don't know, so Dave and I and a bunch of our other buddies, we go on annual trips. And Dave is always, we tease him because he often falls asleep in the middle of random things. We call it micro napping, where he would just sleep for like 30 seconds, 2 minutes, right in the middle of like a poker tournament. Or, well, you know, we're hanging out, we're watching football games. And he'll just fall asleep for a couple of minutes, and then he'll be up again.
Yeah, and then you can last longer, and you're alert, you're attentive. I encourage it, and I literally tell people to do it. I'm not just saying.
Yeah, but that's what I just want to get. I'm breaking Dave's balls a little bit, but mostly it's to give you guys at home a sense of one of the reasons why we love working at TYT and the kind of atmosphere we have here, which is that Dave can just go and take a nap in the control room in the middle of a broadcast, and nobody cares about it. It's entertaining. Obviously, people who work here aren't going to be like, he shouldn't be doing that, but that we have that kind of relaxed company culture. And I hope that that continues, even though Jack probably wouldn't approve.
I don't think he would mind either.
I'm giving Jack a hard time too. But anyway, thank you for watching the Friday Post Game, guys. We hope you have a great weekend. We really appreciate your tuning in. I hope you enjoy it. We like to bring it to you, and we enjoy doing it.
And tell your friends to sign up for membership and watch the post game so you can raise the level of
viewers.
Or buy
them. You know, it's
from
a great
19
gift
to.
Idea.
Our goal is to get to 29 by the end of the month.
Christmas
end of the year.
Christmas is coming. So what's our membership number roughly now? Do we know? Do we publish that? Is that public?
I don't know.
Anyway, we like to get another. We figure if we can get another 50,000 members, that should average out to get the Friday post game at least 35 viewers.
At least.
So, and that's our target for the end of the year. So, if you can help us with that, that's great. But in the meantime, have a great weekend. Thanks for watching, and as always,
stay strong.